H the Avenger, and you're listening to Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. And we have on a very interesting guest today for White Rabbit Radio. We have on, for the first time, Bob Whitaker. And Bob has a fascinating resume. Most of you know him because he wrote these little ditties like anti-racism is a code word for anti-white, diversity is a code word for white genocide, which make up the mantra. But Bob has a unique perspective. And has always has something insightful to say. He was born in 1941, raised in South Carolina, went to the University of South Carolina, University of Virginia Graduate School. He's been a college professor, international aviation negotiator, Capitol Hill senior staffer, Reagan administration appointee, writer for The Voice America. He has written numerous articles and three books under his own name. Bob resides in Columbia, South Carolina. He entered the University of South Carolina at age 16 and was a political science instructor at age 19, received a scholarship to study for a PhD in economics at University of Virginia. Two of his eight graduate instructors there later won Nobel Prize in economics. Bob, both future Nobel laureates, left the University of Virginia while Bob was there. Bob's second reader for his dissertation, James Buchanan, was forced to leave when a new dean took over and who had vowed to clean up the nest of right-wingers in the economics department. We all know about right-wingers being cleaned up. Bob was a professor of economics, but was unable to complete his PhD because of his field of specialization, public choice, the field in which two graduate professors later won Nobel Prizes. And public choice was disliked after the faculty had been purged. Bob then became involved in political activism and intelligence works. This is a blank period in his biography. Bob returned to America in 1972 to become an aircraft negotiator in 1972. During the first few years, he set up press conferences and marches of thousands of people in populist protests against busing and objectionable textbooks. He arranged a joint march of thousands of working people from South Boston and Louisville and West Virginia coal miners protesting objectionable textbooks. For the first time, these people marched against their joint enemy. He also helped arrange for the independent truckers to park their rigs on bridges into Washington at rush hour to protest government discrimination on gas prices in favor of big trucking companies. Bob worked with William Rusher, publisher of National Review, in turning the so-called Wallace Democrats into Reagan Democrats. This was a move that respectable conservatives opposed vigorously. Bob's 1976 book, A Plague on Both Your Houses, attacking both liberal establishment and the watered-down Republican opposition, was a milestone in this campaign. Despite their strong objection to Bob's political opinions, Publishers Weekly and Kirkus gave the book excellent reviews, and the Library Journal recommended it for purchase. Bob worked on Capitol Hill from 1977 to 1982. During that period, two of his most personally gratifying accomplishments, enjoyed today by all of us, were saving the Hubble telescope and preventing the Internal Revenue Service from imposing racial quotas on private schools. Despite his criticism of Ronald Reagan and A Plague on Both Your Houses, Bob was a Reagan appointee in charge of all civilian security clearances and federal staffing. In 1982, Bob conceived and produced an anthology for St. Martin's Press, The New Right Papers. It explained the strategy which led to Reagan's 1980 victory by the people, including Bob himself, who made it a reality while conservatives dithered. Once again, despite their strong objections to Bob's political opinions, Publishers Weekly and Kirkus gave the book excellent reviews, and Library Journal recommended it for purchase. Bob left official federal service in 1985 after a short period of time with Voice of America as a writer. Since then, among other places, he has been in Central America and Russia. Bob was officially retired in the 1990s From that point, he writes in his own words, "What I damn well please." In his third book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, which is a must-buy for all listeners, goes into much more than just academia. He could not get this book published. One small publisher thought it was a great opportunity to get a major writer accepted the book. A month later, they read it. Not only did they back out of publishing the book, but they told Bob they were destroying all correspondence related to it. What's in that book? That's the book that Bob wants to talk to you about now. But besides this book, which was his latest, greatest incarnation when it comes to books, Why Johnny Can't Think, which is a must-have, America's Professor Priesthood, Bob is now running for vice president, which is kind of an interesting. Out of all the things I thought I would interview Bob Whitaker on, and the first time he came on White Rabbit Radio, it would not be about some run for vice president. So, Bob, are you there?
Yep.
What made you want to run for vice president?
Well, as you know from Bugs, it was to get, like everything else I do, it was to break through the silence that we face when we try to say things like diversity equals white genocide. Diversity always means there are too many whites. Which leads on to the idea that, and of course, it leads on to the simple fact that getting rid of us is what that's all about, diversity and all those things. But if you say these things, you have noticed that they are saying these things and they're terrified of them because it's simple. Most of the things I say, once I get to say them, they're so simple, they're devastating.
Yes. Yes.
We would signs saying this and then, saying diversity equals white genocide. And they would take the cities and so forth, and the sign companies would get threats and they'd take them down. We're facing thugs here.
Yeah.
I said a few years back, I've run a lot of campaigns in my time and, I noted, I started the idea that you get certain legal rights when you become a candidate. They can't take down your sign quite as easily. And you can make their different, the phone calls, what do you call them? I can't hear you.
Robocalls?
Yeah, you can use that in politics, and you can get cheap radio time. And when I try to get my message out by any other means, you have the thugs, you have all these objections, and so what being a candidate does is actually let me say these things, and I don't need to say a lot. So when I was put on the board of the American Freedom Party, and they just brought up one day, they brought up the vice presidency, and I said, I'll take it for this purpose, to get the rights of a candidate. In other words, to get any free speech rights, I have to look around where I can get this is the one. That's why I grabbed the nomination. And they're using as the slogan of the campaign, diversity, genocide. My profession was political advertising. So I'm good at it, and give me something that's simply true to say. And they have been trying desperately to shut these things up. They are such simple truths.
Yeah, and for those listeners that like to see Bob's website is robertwhitaker.com. Robertwhitaker.com. Pretty simple website.
It's robertwwhitaker.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it is. robertwwhitaker.com. Thank you for correcting me, Bob. I'm looking at the website now. I missed that middle W. It's robertwwhitaker.com. And those listeners that know, of late, Bob, we've seen, I don't know how much you've seen my Twitter feed, but Laura can show you. Your assistant there can show you, your right-hand girl. Someone can show you my Twitter feed. What we're seeing all across the UK are stickers. Diversity is a code word for white genocide. Anti-race is a code word for anti-white. Giant stickers are going up, and sometimes they're logoed for White Rabbit Radio, and I don't know necessarily whether they're copying stuff offline, and I don't really care, or just getting them from one of the graphic designers that are putting these things out. But they're sticking these things up all over the place, and they're actually starting to become very concerned over these particular memes, obviously more and more. If you put up a billboard, as listeners know, they go absolutely berserk. You got death threats and everything else, but they can't really do anything with yard signs here or stickers here and there because they're, unless they catch you, I guess. But this has become a manner of protest.
It sounds a lot like stuff from behind the Iron Curtain, where people would put up stickers because the police would come after them.
Right. They put up flyers. They can't do anything about hit-and-run flyer drops or hit-and-run stickers, but the stickers themselves, the mantras, the diversity is a code word for white genocide, the anti-racism is a code word for anti-white, and they all have the hashtag white genocide or hashtag anti-white on, so there's immediately searchable. Everyone knows what it is now. The stuff is getting out there. I just tweeted something the other day from the middle of the United Kingdom where a girl said, I can't believe I'm walking down the street and I see this giant sticker saying diversity is a code word for white genocide. What are these people thinking? But this is the type of confirmation we look for, the type of thing that drives this type of system crazy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I worked with, as I've said, I can't be very specific about it. It's a funny thing. People say, well, I can't find your security intelligence record. Well, you bet you can't find that. But we would work with Samizdat. These are the people, those people who brought down the Soviet government.
And for listeners, let me just say, listeners that don't know, that are just terming, Samizdat means anonymous. Samizdat were the original booklets, anonymous booklets that undermined the Soviet Union with memes, basically.
It was illegal.
Yes.
And these stickers appearing in places. You see, this is the kind of thing, if people realized it, that you normally get under a dictatorship.
Yes, this is common resistance.
Yeah, it's a normal resistance. These are the stuff that we use are common resistance methods. And I notice that they are looking more and more like every police state. Now, this is a simple point I'm making here. This looks like a police state. It isn't a police state. This is the way I boil things down. They talk about how evil white people are, and I point out, I want you to get this across. The white race, every bad thing the white race has done is common to every race. Slavery, and all these other things, and mass slaughter and taking lands from people. Every race took lands from people. Mm-hmm. The American Indians in America today, the people they drove out are down in South America now. The white race, every bad thing we did was common. But nobody else got rid of smallpox. Nobody else got rid of starvation. Nobody else got rid of polio. The list is just endless, and every white accomplishment is unique. So all I need to do is to get those in, and the other side is having more and more trouble keeping it down. You see, I've been through this before. This is what you do in a police state. If people could realize how much like dealing in a police state this is, they'd understand what I was doing a lot better.
Yeah. Well, everything white is evil and everything non-white is virtuous. It's an automatic, it's kind of like, angels and devils. And it's not based in reality at all.
Well, therefore, they're saying outright the white race is evil and must be destroyed.
Sure.
I've heard that one before. It had to do with Jews, but it's the same language.
Yeah, it's the same language. Yeah, and it is interesting. In every country, I have listeners all over the world. If you're in Ireland, it's always you got to take immigrants because you migrated. In the UK, the big one is you're an evil colonialist power, so you have to be colonialized. Never mind the fact that the Ottoman Turks made the British colonialists look like lightweights when it comes to brutal colonialism. But no one's saying that Turkey has to take in millions and millions of non-Turks and force assimilate them and pretty much destroy themselves ethnically, culturally, and everything else.
I boil these things down more and more, and the mantra is pretty infamous because it was when we really started getting out there with this message. But the fact is, when one thinks about it, and this is what they're trying to prevent, when you talk about immigration, everybody knows you're only talking about white countries. You can tell whether the world will say a country needs immigration by looking at the skin color of the people in the country.
Yeah, it's that simple and basic.
That's the whole point, is keeping it like that, keeping it simple, keeping it. It's devastating for them. It's the truth. You see, that's why all totalitarian regimes have to have screamers, thugs, and thought police. Because they can't, if you keep hitting them with the simple truth, they treat it as something deadly, because it is.
I think the thing that most listeners like about the mantra and your particular memes is that, one, you're a pretty bright fella, to say the least, but that you can write these memes that can be repeated by a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old in the UK, or they can put up a sticker and actually know what it means. They can understand it. This isn't like some, you know, although Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar can be like reading your blog can be like a college-level discourse on some occasions. At the same time, the mantra is pretty much at the eighth grade level. It's very simple to understand. It's very easy to see, to understand. It's very duplicatable. A lot of the times, a lot of these dissidents, these paleo conservatives and whatnot, they, you know, a lot of times we get too caught up. Once you walk down this road, they get too caught up in these college level conversations that can never translate into something a 7-year-old kid can do. But when you have resistance in the Soviet Union, that's done across the board. It's done at a very low level with very simple memes over and over again.
One of the jokes we had was a Russian would have understood this. I don't know if you understand it nowadays, but they had a joke that Saudi Arabia has gone communist.
That's funny.
Has gone communist. There is a shortage of sand.
Yeah. Yeah, the big crisis there was the Aral Sea that they destroyed, right? It's kind of funny. Every time the communists were taking over something, there would automatically be a shortage. That's the joke, you know.
These people have lived all their lives. But another point I keep making, I remember I'm a professional at this. I got paid for this. And the most important thing in that sentence is the period. Because we know a lot of things we want to talk about, like the Aral Sea or something like that.
Sure.
Start doing that, you start moving into the enemy's territory.
You start trying to educate.
Well, whatever it is, it isn't war.
No. No, it's 100% accurate. Yeah, right. We don't want it when the camera's on or when you're putting out a sticker, you don't want to give the enemy anything more than you have to.
Yeah, well,
because if you do, they don't want to. They'll put on something about the Aral Sea if you put some dissertation on the Aral Sea, and they won't put on the general comment that you're making or the general meme.
This is like throwing a life raft to the other side. Because when you say diversity means too many whites, period, they are really at sea. And if you can bring up any, if you bring up any other stuff, yeah. Point you just made. That is the difference. But in bugs, we leave them right there. We have no shame about repeating the same point over and over and over in exactly the same words. It doesn't, we're not there to make us look smart. We're there to expose their crimes.
And that is a very good point. I think sometimes the consensus is always when you come into this particular type of thing, they're generally coming from formal, let's say some of the formal pro-white positions. They call themselves paleo-conservatives or white nationalists or something like that. I think the tendency is to worry about perfection or to worry about doing things, you know, being laughed at or something like that. Which really, we're pretty much the polar opposite. In fact, we have a world-famous hacktivist slash troll that is now using the hashtag white genocide. And he made the interesting comment to me. His name is Weave. Everyone, most listeners would immediately know who he is, except Bob. Bob wouldn't know who he is, but I'll have to explain this to Bob later. He's a famous hactivist, and he's talking about white genocide. What impressed me is that he immediately understood when you can tweet out to hundreds of thousands of people that, or actually, I don't know how many followers he has in reality, but he has at least 20, 30,000 followers, which means 5 to 10 times the number read his stuff. When you could tweet out that if it's not white genocide, why is it happening to white countries and only white countries? Why is immigration being forced on white countries and only white countries? You're pretty much understanding the mantra. Just leave it at that. And what he had to say, Bob, was that our stuff, the memes you write are anti-fragile. They're the opposite of fragile. Something fragile would be something you worry about Saturday Night Live making fun of. Like when you were in Washington, if Saturday Night Live would make fun of a conservative, they would fall to pieces, some Republican. This type of stuff, you don't have to worry about repeating it too much. It works the direct opposite of what you'd think. You don't have to worry about someone making fun of it.
They always get on. One of their problems is that when they use the standard stuff, it rolls off us like water. And they've begun to kind of give up before they would say you're a bunch of inbreds. You're a bunch of ignoramuses. And all this used to work. The other side would then try to put on its coat and tie and look intellectual. In other words, we were worried about what we looked like, not what we were saying. And they cannot, they have nothing to grab hold of if you stop with the point you made. And that is very hard for any of us to do. Make the point. Make it again. Make it again. No shame. Yeah. This is war.
I always tell people after a while you'll learn to be able to make it from different directions because the enemy is always arguing a position that always puts you in a world without any white people. Your job is to simply make the mantra point accordingly to point that out over and over again. And there's several of them that can be done. And it's not rocket science. It just takes a little bit of time, but more and more are doing it.
Very hard to do. But I showed an example. Something like book 1984. You speak. Did you see that article?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you printed it, in fact.
Yes.
And
because you had up for those that can go to whitakeronline.org/bugs, you can look down for Newspeak. You can also go to whiterabbitradio.net, and I ran the article with my comments and pictures of what's going on in the UK.
Right. Now, this woman is saying, now here's the simple thinking that I do, that I got paid for. This woman was saying, she was saying extremist. They've kind of run out of using racist all the time, inbred all the time, and whatever the Now they've started using extremists.
White supremacists as well.
Yeah, the white supremacists, they're still using it. But why didn't, now I know, because I am a pro, these people don't do this. What I would have said was, it hasn't been that long since a woman being in the government was extremist. Period. You notice that little thing at the end. Period. What he did here, if all radical views should have been suppressed.
Yeah.
See? Not in retrospect. Well, a lot of things look obvious in retrospect.
Well, the funny thing about hate is it's an anti-concept. When you outlaw something you hate, you give the other side the right, when they come to power, to outlaw what they hate. And it's a process that turns upside down all the time, in the history of the world at least. This trying to call someone extremist and ban their views, it's childish. But it typically, it always blows up in the face of people doing it.
Well, it's done. The same word. They're using the same words Stalin would use, Hitler would use. Everybody has used the same words they're using right now. Is you should be banned because you aren't respectable. You know, that no respectable view, unrespectable view, says you have the right to ban them. That's what they're saying. And they're running out of verbiage.
Yeah. They're getting it taken away from them, word by word. Racist, they don't use that anymore, as you said. They're now down to white supremacists. But what's interesting to listeners, I'm sure, and maybe you yourself, I don't know if you're up on the recent, how much news you know about this subject, but there was a petition over letting the Boer, the white South Africans, migrate, who are on genocide watch like level 6. Letting them migrate back to Europe. There was a petition that gained 20,000+. It really shocked everyone. It got all kinds of attention and everything else. This big petition to let them migrate back to Europe, right to return back to Europe. Mm-hmm. And that put the spotlight on white genocide in South Africa. And it got a lot of attention. And that is the type of thing going on. But, you know, there's still some people out there that say, you know, it's not genocide, it's not this, it's not that. It's just the ravings of a few white supremacists. But more and more people are starting to pan that, you know, starting to look at the news reports, starting to look at the, what these memes are saying. These memes are all over the place. Diversity is a code word for white genocide. And, you know, we're continuously making fun of the anti-whites when they say something like this, you know, oh, it's just the imagination of some white supremacists, and it's just crime, it's just random crime, putting them on genocide watch. You know, it becomes laughable because it's so insane. But I thought it was interesting how much attention that gained, how many people actually got on and went for the petition to put it in front of the EU, which I thought was rather interesting.
We paid a good deal of attention to what was going over back in the Samizdat area. And no Soviet expert, not one, had any idea the Soviet Union was coming down. None of them. People always say, well, actually there was one. No, there wasn't one. Every Soviet expert completely missed the total collapse of the Soviet Union.
Right. And we actually have something very absurd. I always use the analogy that imagine the emperor of China trying to make China non-Chinese, which is what's going on in Western civilization. We have these emperors, they're trying to make Western civilization non-white. What could the emperor of China do when the Chinese get upset and revolt? Not much. They sit and take it. You know, there's still plenty of white people to revolt. You know, it's not all hope is lost, end of the world. You know, the first step is message. Everything comes down to message because they're not letting us say anything else. So don't give them anything other than a meme they have to focus on. And they don't like this white genocide stuff. They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So the ideal is just to keep pressing it and pressing it and pressing it from every different original angle, like running for vice president.
Talking about China. Or Chinese emperors. You see, that makes you look intelligent and knowledgeable, which you are. but it gets it off of their crime.
Well, the point is that if I'm trying to make a basic analogy, and I do this basic analogy all the time with China. You know, America in 1965 was 90% white Indo-European. Most people don't know that. China right now is 90% Han Chinese. All right, what happens if you try to make China non-Chinese? Well, you're going to destroy the place. I mean, for one, it's genocide. Two, it's unworkable. It's an unworkable scheme. This is a silly system. It's unworkable. You know, the idea that there's, you know, that it's all hope is lost and everything else is absurd, and the idea that this thing is workable is absurd, in my point. That's the point I was trying to make, that I make all the time. You know, I mean, the idea that you're going to make China non-Chinese or the idea that you're going to make Western civilization non-white and make it workable is simply absurd. Everyone's noticing that there's all these failing cities, but no one asks, you know, why. All these failed social programs, no one asks why. Well, if you're trying to make China non-Chinese, well, pretty soon you're going to fail everything. You can't make these type of structural changes. If you understand white genocide, you understand all these things. You can't make these type of structural changes without wreaking havoc across the board.
I don't have anything to say about China.
Okay.
The only thing I've noticed about China is that everybody talks about it's going to be such an economic power. The Chinese per capita income, even now, I'm an economist professionally. I could give you an hour on that. But even reported income in China per capita is about a fifth of ours. That's why they have 1.2 billion people and are beginning to claim that they have our production. But Japan, per capita income, right in there with us.
Right. Korea, I think, is pretty close to Japan as well, South Korea. But the point is, in demographic changes, when you make these type of demographic changes, you're going to wreak havoc across the board. If you were to try to make these demographic changes in Japan, Japan would be an obvious example. You obviously are going to destroy their manufacturing, which is pretty high-tech, high-end. You're going to destroy everything. So when people ask, you know, what's going wrong economically, it's white genocide is going wrong economically.
Explain something to you. If somebody pulls a knife on you on the street and you shoot them, the discussion does not then go around about what kind of life they would have led, what kind of life you led. The point is that to destroy a race, my race. They are committing a crime. I don't want to talk about that. So, a lot of times, and see, you have an audience that you know how to deal with. This is your audience we're talking about. So I don't want to interfere with that at all. You have to have more than one subject because I'm boring as hell. I keep repeating the same thing over and over. If you're in a courtroom, the lawyer there, when he's talking about the crime, he looks what he listens what the witness says. He repeats what the witness said. That witness would give anything if that lawyer would talk about anything else.
Sure.
And to have White Rabbit successful, you have to talk about anything else. You can't just bore your people to death.
Yeah.
But what? So I'm not criticizing you.
I totally understand. I tend to use a lot of analogies. Listeners of mine use analogies. But when you talk about demographic changes in North America and whatnot, and white genocide, what's another analogy? what would we? You know, how crazy would it be to try to make China non-China? Well, that'd be pretty crazy. You know. Don't expect it to work or expect people not to be upset over white genocide is pretty crazy. That's the basic analogy I tend to make. It tends to work quite well with my audience.
That's what matters.
Yes.
That's what we do is, as I keep saying, you know, one thing we don't do is you don't get one of our, what I call bugs, our group. They don't say, well, why doesn't somebody do so-and-so? Half of the general discussion is why doesn't somebody do so-and-so? And we say, do it and report on it.
Yep, that's basically it in a nutshell.
Got out there and you formed White Rabbit Radio, and it's your baby.
Yeah.
You don't need to explain to me what you do. You've got a great sized audience on our subject. So.
You've never been on the radio with me, or probably listened to me enough to know that I do a lot of analogies. That's or at least a handful of different analogies that really tend to a certain audience. Certain analogies work better than others, obviously, but it tends to throw people off when they realize the type of demographic changes that with under the program of white genocide they're trying to make, and what would happen if you were really say something as silly as, well, we're going to make China non-Chinese and think it's going to work, you know, or something crazy like that. Make these changes from 90% to, look at the changes in California. You know, you're going from the land of the Beach Boys to not the land of the Beach Boys in a very short period of time, and hoping the place doesn't go belly up and have all these problems, and much less have someone call you out for genocide, namely white genocide. Well, that's simply absurd.
Well, we have to doubt to each thing. As I say, I'm coming back then just not to not criticize you, and that's very hard to do. Now, if I'm planning a campaign, the immediate recognition is this guy is working in this area, this guy is working in this area. He would say, well, I'm using this analogy, and like you're doing now, talking strategy, and you keep in mind he's got his area to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And my area is to come up with what amounts to ammunition.
We call it nuclear warfare, because once you drop it, they call it the golden lure to troll with, and that means as soon as you let it out, everyone just starts going crazy, and the white genocide golden lure for the anti-white fish is pretty great. It's good stuff. And you definitely have come up with enough of them. What diversity is means chasing down the last white person. all these good things. What are you coming up with next?
Well, I have several to, what did you call them? My girl Friday, Laura here. She's keeping articles on hand. When I come up with something, I'll write an article about it, and it's, the wonderful thing now is I have a bunch of pro-level people who know what to do with it, how to handle it.
Yep.
I send them a few words, and they see the potential.
Self-hatred is sick was one I tweeted out, self-hatred. You were talking about self-hatred is sick.
I was trying out on the group now. Our entire society today is based on the virtue of self-hatred. In other words, if you hate white, if you hate yourself, if you, and this is a tendency, if you have a name like your name is Adams and you make a speech talking about, well, really the Adamses were nobody and so forth, you sort of feel like you're being virtuous. If you, spend your whole lifetime starving yourself and beating yourself, that's supposed to make you a virtuous person. Well, some people who are virtuous might do that, but it is fundamentally a sick outlook.
Yeah, and you get these various different, I remember the last tweet I got directly to me was, I don't feel threatened by living in a multicultural society. You know, these type of anti-white tweets, where they don't feel threatened by living in a multicultural society. They're basically, you're dealing with an opponent that is, again, certain amount of self-hatred, certain amount of brainwashing, and they just pretty much regurgitate these memes right out of state-run media over and over again. Diversity is strength. I don't feel threatened by multiculturalism. And that's of course, you know, fine for her specifically, but when you're dealing with code words and nefarious, nasty words like multiculturalism, which don't mean what anyone says they mean things like white genocide. You know, multiculturalism is code word for white genocide. These are things we tend to point out over and over and over again. I think that most listeners are certainly well aware of that. And it was definitely good to have you on here for 40 minutes, Bob. And
one thing I want to say here.
Sure.
Call that tailgating.
Call that tip.
Statement that guy made.
Yeah.
No. When he says it, you say, diversity equals white genocide. You don't address points like that. And that's something people have trouble with.
Sure. Well, that's the whole point. Usually what we do, Bob, if you've ever seen it, they get a picture back that says diversity is a code word for white genocide, or diversity means chasing down the last white person. When they start on this, well, multiculturalism, this was an anti-white tweeting directly to me. I haven't responded to it yet at all. I just saw it just now. And it was, multiculturalism. I don't feel threatened by multiculturalism or something like that. Something, off the wall like that.
Totally is, if you just go right back to the point.
Right. That's the whole ideal, yes.
Usually our people get lost, like respectable conservatives.
Or they want to debate the meaning of the word multiculturalism. No, it's multiculturalism is just a code word for white genocide, or diversity is just a code word for white genocide, or something simple, repeatable, something that can be hammered back again and again and again, which is what's worked. It's what's worked for us very, very well. And the stuff is coming up all over the place. What do you have going on at Vice Presidency? What do you have up next?
Right now, it's historical. I'm pointing out to people that Ross Perot, back in 1992, he's known as an idiot now. And if you look at Wikipedia, I wrote an article. But I've been a lot of campaigns. I was in the Wallace campaign, and we couldn't believe it when Wallace got up to 22% of the vote in the polls. Perot got up to 39%. And they're trying desperately to forget that. It looked like the people were going to tell the establishment in 1992, when the Soviet Union had just fallen down, had just collapsed, that people were going to tell both parties to go to hell. The thugs got to him. He's a rich man. He's not used to dealing with the political thugs. But, and so he misreacted and withdrew it. But the point is, that 39% is the point, that he had more votes than a sitting president and the Democratic nominee. He had 39% of the vote when he withdrew.
You said for years, if it wasn't for that stunt over his daughter's wedding, that he would have easily won. You thought he would have easily won, based on the numbers.
I'm not sure. As he got closer to the election, you say he was using the usual respectable people. And they're not used to this kind of political jungle warfare that I've dealt in. I know that sounds funny, but there to have done this kind of thing. And he had too many respectable people he knew. And so I think he probably would have screwed it up eventually. It would have gone back into that sort of liberal, respectable, conservative type of thing. But it's hard to explain that. But if you've really been in these struggles, he was winning because somebody asked him his position on a particular issue, and he started talking about how he would study it rather than how he would solve it. Now, Republicans and Democrats both had rigid positions, and he said running the government is like running anything else. First you find out about it. And a few common sense like that, and people were desperately tired of these parties. And I want us to come out this way too, where we start saying, let's run the government the way you run anything else. Let's find out about it. Let's talk about it. Let us have freedom of speech back. Not just two sides screaming their point of view. And the fight right now is over freedom of speech. And they are so exposed on that. As I said, every word they use to shut us up comes straight out of the totalitarian dictionary. They never address us, our points.
No. know, I find also that they have, you know, a lot of like this young, this is definitely a female looking at her profile on Twitter that tweeted that back, that I haven't responded to yet. You have a lot of young people, even some older that think in terms of America was always a multicultural country, and now they're starting to think that you know, the UK was always multicultural. This is simply, obviously, absurdity.
Omni professor tells him this.
Sure. There you go. But you were young enough to remember when America was 90%+ white. They don't even think that ever happened. So they're kind of always startled by, you know, the type of changes that these guys are really trying to make. And if you understand white genocide, you pretty much understand all these things. But if you don't, you're always missing something on any equation across the board.
Well, I like that term, mommy professor.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually gets through to them that they just spent over years writing down and repeating everything they were told. That's what it is.
I think many of our side often complain about the, you're in a society where the attention span is as short as a goldfish, and all these different sayings that the media has about, you know, they're now complaining nonstop about social media and all these destructive memes, but our stuff works to our advantage. The Bugs, Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, the mantra works to our advantage and not to our disadvantage. We don't have to sit there and explain too much, just some basic memes and get them out there, and that has always been what works for us.
This is one reason I keep saying that it is important to realize that nobody wants to talk about the collapse of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union did not collapse because it was, quote, non-viable. Say, it collapsed because it was ridiculous. Now, that's a big difference. It was an earnest social experiment, or the idea of giving the whole economy to a bunch of college professors calling themselves intellectuals. That's insane. And it collapsed on them. And eventually, they just weren't able to hold the people in. It just collapsed because it was ridiculous.
Yeah, what's interesting is also the similarities between the current system we're in, the white genocide model with the Soviet model. You know, what's interesting is the similarities.
That problem with William Buckley, the old respectable conservative. Their main concern was that they looked good, and they'd just fall all over some liberal who would say something good about them. Whereas I considered that liberal to be a complete moron repeating this crap that didn't work. But, so we have the same split again.
What's funny is shocking to many, but they never bring up the point, is that how many far left people are still around that think they can make communism work. That's really funny, you know.
Back then,
yeah.
I told people, they said, you know, they were asking me about the future. For one thing, I knew that each era of the Soviet Union had the right to secede. Oh, hell, I forgot my point now. But it collapsed because it is silly. Now, what I keep wanting to point out is that genocide is their position. I don't want to talk about anything else. I mean, if you get a prosecuting attorney and he's got the witness on murder and the witness wants to talk about something else, he'd really be an idiot to get off of something else. We've got them cold if we will use it. Oh, yeah, I had the same problem with Buckley and these people. They wanted to look good. They wanted to look mainstream. And their real resentment of me was that I wanted to fight. And you can see how somebody with these pretensions to being an aristocrat or whatever the hell it was with Buckley. I don't know if anybody even remembers him now, but they had these sort of pretensions. And those were very important. They didn't like somebody like me bringing them down.
Well, you would make a simple point about a worker's paradise that machine gun people were trying to leave it. Which is a very simple point. A worker's paradise that has to have walls up to keep people from leaving. It's a basic contradiction that builds this whole entire society, like the society we're in. You know, diversity and multiculturalism are wonderful, but only for white people. And only white countries. Immigration are only for white countries.
And why do you enforce it?
There you go. Diversity is so wonderful, we got to enforce it at gunpoint.
Thing nobody could, why they gave me such publicity was I could actually deal with working people. Not a respectable conservatives could find any real working people. I had put together a march of thousands of working people who paid for their own trip by bus all the way from Boston and Louisville and other places. Real working people. And the conservatives could not work with real working people. They ended up working with fundamentalist preachers. That was the only way that they, because they had somebody they could call in, you know, like the Mexican who delivers the Mexican vote. They wanted somebody that they could deal with, so they dealt with the preachers, and they lost. They pretty soon just destroyed this whole direction, the Reagan direction. Won so many things. It lost because they deal with working people.
No, they don't. They don't want to talk to the masses.
They don't know how.
Yeah.
Wouldn't admit it. Now that's the problem.
Yeah. They won't. Well, that's typically been the problem for our side for a long, long time historically. Is they don't do the eighth grade memes or the simple things that are totally duplicatable. The left typically has that stuff down. Diversity is our strength. They have all these little mantras they see night and day, these little vicious little things historically. America's nation of immigrants would be a famous one. All these nasty little things.
What is happening right now? Again, I'm going to find some people who can see this. Is back in 2008, I pointed out, back then they were talking about the Clintons were the only black people in, you know, at the top of the government. And I said, you know, the blacks pretty soon are going to want black people who are black people at the head of the government. I didn't realize it. About 2 months later, Obama's trying to get out in front.
Right. Well, Bill Clinton, you cut out briefly there. What he's saying is Bill Clinton was bragging about how he was technically the first black president or something like that. And then, of course, you've got Obama in, who is a real black president.
And I said, the time has got to come when the blacks come on real black. And a lot, it hasn't been that long since the liberals were whites. Just had this very obedient vote, and they'd just say, "All right, boy, come on, vote for me," and they would. But their coalition is beginning to tremble at the bottom. From the right, you don't see it. But when they start breaking up, then, and historically, when the ruling group begins to break up, nobody foresees it. Like Russia, they did not foresee it. But I see it, that these groups are like any group that's held power for a while. They've started to compete with each other. Now, let me tell you a piece of simple arithmetic. We keep emphasizing that white people are no longer are becoming not going to be a majority. However, very often in history, the group the majority becomes the overwhelming minority. You split this country up into races and so forth, into racial and ethnic groups, the whites are going to be an overwhelming power where they weren't when the majority was holding together. That happened when Lincoln was elected. He got 40% of the vote, but the Democrats split into three parts. And I, historically, all the time, the other side is beginning some trembles that they don't see and our people don't see. So like you and I, we watch for the word white genocide. We watch for these things that nobody else would look for. Well, that's why I got paid for this stuff. But there are some trembles out there. Their coalition, and when their coalition goes down, our whites, depending if we're in a position, we will be representing the largest group among various groups. I hate to get off an arithmetic because people get nervous with it. So.
Yeah, I think many people realize that the coalition that the liberals that have brought the liberals to power, that have given the liberals so much, this coalition is very shaky, as each one of these groups want their own representatives and they're at each other's throats, really, with their ethnic interests.
And historically, it comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
You have no idea where it's going to come from, but I can see the little shaky things going on over there. But
no. Well, I think the white stereotypical anti-white left winger that's kind of has half a brain that no, maybe they're not brainwashed, maybe they're just evil looking for power. Realizes one morning that someone's going to have to represent whites. As of right now, no one's representing any white kids. Sooner or later, someone's going to represent all the white people. And that group's going to have a whole lot of power all of a sudden.
You know, the classic of this is nobody predicted that the Archduke Joseph in 1914 was going to be assassinated, which was the beginning of World War I. Nobody would predict that. Oh, but Kaiser Germany said, it'll be some damn thing in the Balkans.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. That I can see it happening. I can't tell you what the incident will be.
The trends are set in stone, the trends are afoot, and this type of thing has happened before, it'll happen again.
Yeah. Together, a coalition based on absurdity has its own problems.
obviously. Well, I think that's a good place to end it. We're in a silly system, and holding together all the absurd contradictions is an impossibility, especially in the face of memes that basically tell the truth over and over again. And it was good to have you on, Bob.
The only thing keeping them in power is the kept opposition.
Yeah, those that are willing to not basically engage in warfare.
Yeah.
Now, that's what it is. They're engaging in, you know, I always say, and in closing, I always say that the problem historically for our side is that they think they're on a golf course or at tee. We're at war. With this group, at least. You're at war right now. If someone's trying to wipe you out, white genocide's afoot, and that's a fact, you're at war. And war takes different tactics, totally different deal than at tea. You might not talk about something at tea, but in your war, you're going to have to talk about it, you know. And that's what Bob Whitaker specializes in, this type of, what did you call it, political jungle warfare.
Jungle warfare.
There you go. And you can find Bob at robertwwhitaker.com. He's running for vice president of the American Freedom Party. And you can also find him at whitakeronline.org/bugs. And you wouldn't be listening to White Rabbit Radio or anything else if it wasn't for this guy. So he's the writer of the mantra. Definitely head on over there, read what he has to say. He always has something insightful, always has something incredibly simple with a period on the end, and always has something worth repeating. But we're going to end it right there, and we're going to have you back in the future, Bob, because I think they're going to enjoy this. And we'll be back with you on the next Follow the White Rabbit. I just wanted to do a brief follow-up at the end of that particular episode. I want to thank Laura from FightWhiteGenocide.com for getting a hold of Bob and getting him scheduled to come on White Rabbit Radio. I also wanted to thank Bob again. Bob does something very, very well. Bob Whitaker is a master of these memes. He does the 3-second soundbite. And it's very important in this discussion. I wanted it to be as raw as possible. And I wanted to do more of these. In the future, we're going to do more of these because it's incredibly important to understand the difference in meme dissemination and the different functions that come into play. What Bob is good at, if you go back to Horus the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit number one, what I do promote is Bob Whitaker as a meme writer. That is what he's good at. And what is great about that particular interview is you're getting the two different mindsets. One, my listeners are going to hear my mindset, which comes at things from a different angle. And Bob's mindset, though, is incredibly important when talking to a reporter and you only have one sentence. That's it. If your group is going through what Pearl Weiss have went through over the past several decades, and you're not given any airtime, you have very narrow room. The ideal of putting up a sticker or putting up a billboard with anything other than a short, professionally written meme like diversity is a code word for white genocide is suicidal because they're going to print everything but that particular meme. In other words, we don't do 20-point plans up on the wall on posters and stuff like that. You see a basic propaganda, basic design, basic meme dissemination. What is great about that particular interview that we just did is that you hear Bob discuss his article Newspeak. And as you just, and this article is also carried on WhiteRabbitRadio.net. What is fascinating is watching Bob's mind work, and you get Bob immediately talks about Theresa May, and that's the woman in the video. She's an official from the UK, and she wants to ban extremist language. And what Bob did was very simply, he cut it down to one particular meme to give back, and that's it, period. Having a woman in your position would be an extremist position at one point in time in the UK. Or it was even shorter than that period. You can go back and listen to it, but you get the basic idea. That is what he does. Because when you're talking to a reporter, or if you're talking to someone, especially from the press, and you're pro-white, you don't have any other time to get your point across. If you give them too much, they're going to put everything but the basic point. They're not going to put the simple point you want to disseminate. They're going to put anything but. And that's traditionally what happens. Bob will never give them more than that one sentence, and that's it. That's it when you're talking to the enemy. What's interesting about my particular mindset, and Bob was before, especially afterwards, I could tell that in the conversation that he was concerned with criticizing, that it would come across as some type of criticism. What we're doing is broad meme dissemination. If you're on a show, for instance, you would never use a broad analogy in a very simple discussion with a reporter. Diversity is a code word for white genocide. There's no need to go into analogies or in examples. You want to keep it as simple as possible so they'll disseminate the meme. For the same reason, we wouldn't put up a 20-point plan on a billboard. The same reason, if you look at EuroRabbit, the Twitter feed, and the different graphic designers that are putting stuff out, their tendency is to always, when they send stuff for me to look at, is they're making it a little bit too elaborate. What we're going to do is highlight certain words and implant our meme. There's a totally different mindset when you're doing longer. Let's say you're supposed to do an interview, and that interview, they're going to do the whole entire interview. They're going to give you the whole entire time segment of 10 minutes. What's a good example I can use, since I'm always using examples and analogies? A good example would be Fox News. Fox News, the neoconservatives, are the masters of meme dissemination. Now, obviously, they disseminate memes that we don't necessarily agree with all the time, but that's not the point. The point is how this thing is done. Charles Krauthammer would be an example that you can watch every single day, fill time, and disseminate memes at the same time. He's not writing the stuff like Bob. He doesn't write Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Israel is our only ally in the Middle East. One of the famous memes that I talked about at the Stormfront conference that they disseminated at lightweight speed, and Charles Krauthammer played a critical role, was the famous Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. You're dealing with an eighth grade meme, like a diversity is a code word for white genocide. And what Charles Krauthammer will do is he will sit there and he does these segments on Fox News where he has to take up time. He has to talk about whatever he's supposed to talk about. And in this particular type of thing, they usually pitch a show. For instance, when I go on Red Ice, we know what we're going to talk about because the show's already been pitched, and my job is to go on for talk for 2 hours and work in white genocide to get people interested, enticed into this particular concept, into using these particular memes, as well as to basically disseminate these memes as far as we can into the core base of the population, especially that core audience, which is critical for our particular memes, or for any meme, any particular memes that don't have major media access like Fox News. Truck Roy would be a great example of someone fulfilling a Charles Krautheimer-like role from a formal position on Rents.com every morning. He has to talk for an hour. He has to fill that much time, but at the same time, he wants to make various different points. Like Charles Krautheimer, you'll see him talking, then he'll make various different points and arguments about Israel. Or about, you know, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. If there's a meme to be seeded, he's going to come back to that, and the host is going to let him. But he has that much time. He has all the time in the world. What Bob has always said to pro-whites, you're not going to have that. You don't have that when you're talking to a reporter. You don't have that when trying to seed a meme. Therefore, when putting up a sticker, you keep it as short as possible, keep it professionally written, and do something drastic and hard-hitting. And there's a couple other topics to go into on this. What I'm going to do is we're going to do another show about filling time, which is another avenue. But Bob fulfills a totally different function. Bob doesn't do that. As he'll tell you, he's the most uninteresting guest you could have on because he only gives one sentence. That's the way his mind works. That is what he's geared for. This isn't necessarily good or bad or one function or another. They all go together because Charles Krautheimer doesn't write his own memes. He disseminates. He fills time. He's every evening you will see him on from roughly about 6:45 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Fox News. You'll see him back on sometimes during O'Reilly's show if they pitch a show. They're going to give him several minutes to talk. They're not going to cut him off. It's not a hostile conversation. He's allowed to say whatever he wants to say, whatever type of quixotic insight he has about the current day's news. Very similar to Truck Roy on Runch Radio every morning. At the same time, his job is to disseminate memes when it's time to do so. They're different functions. It's not that Charles Krautheimer isn't some genius or isn't smart in his own right or isn't very well educated. He is. He has all kinds of quixotic insights, but everything's baked down to those eighth grade memes like Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. Bob is the writer of such memes, although Bob's memes are a little more truthful, like diversity is a code word for white genocide or anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. But in that particular conversation you got a very good example of how different mindsets work that are important in the full dissemination of a meme. One is the mindset of what to say given one soundbite in regarding, let's say, the Newspeak article, when a reporter calls. When you don't have anything other, if you give them other something other than a soundbite, you're in trouble. If you put up a sticker or a billboard with anything other than a soundbite, you're in trouble. And the soundbite, for our case, had better be something radical, simply because you're not going to get any attention with something mamby-pamby. We've tried all that in the past. Another mindset is what to say if you have to fill time over 10 minutes. In other words, you're given 10 minutes, and that's pretty much what you need to do any type of analogy or any type of good examples. You need about 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. Right now, we're at about the 8-minute mark of this particular little segment, and I've given you one example of how things work. The human mind always works from analogies to examples, non-local to local. And we're going to go into some of this type of thing. My next episode will be with Truck Roy on filling time. This is important because Bugs now, Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, has something very critical. We have meme writers. We have meme disseminators. The neoconservatives would be one group you can study. They're not all doing the same thing, but yet they all are. Some are filling time. Some are disseminating memes. Vis-a-vis, some are writing them, and some are disseminating them directly to large audiences. It doesn't take that many to do quite a bang-up job from the top down. In our particular case, we have all kinds of animations, all kinds of videos. We're filling time across the board. We have another great example of filling time would be White Genocide Project. White Genocide Project provides the counter-narrative. So anytime you see a piece of news come out that you think is anti-white, I can guarantee you it is, and White Genocide Project is going to give you the counter-narrative. They're going to break down the Orwellian language, and they're also going to insert memes right into that. Similar to what Charles Krautheimer is doing from Fox News and the Washington Post every day, sort of, Ours is more legitimate, in my opinion. But these are this is an example of what goes on, what it takes to get this stuff out from a broad perspective. And to give you a brief history, those that don't understand or don't know the history of White Rabbit Radio, White Rabbit Radio was a podcast. The podcast itself precedes the website by a year. So if you're listening to Follow the White Rabbit number one, Follow the White Rabbit number two or number three, if you like that type of podcast, if you like alternative news, you would probably like that type of podcast. If you like a Red Ice Creations or an InfoWars or something like that, you'd probably like the podcast. If you don't like that type of media, you definitely wouldn't. But with that being said, the podcast precedes the website by about 1 year and was founded in Samizdat fashion, totally anonymous. People think that, you know, Tim Murdoch, that's me, Horace the Avenger, put up this podcast, White Rabbit Radio, and that's how it went. No, I didn't put it up at all. It was put up by a third party on behalf of Bob to help promote this particular model, Samizdat, completely anonymous. No one knew who I was. The topic was really out of the box. The allegories we use are really out of the box. Everything had to be over the top to try to break through that particular initial point to entice people into using Bob's memes. The neocons are in a position that, in many ways, we're coming into the position of. In other words, Bob can write a meme, self-hatred is sick. And Truck Roy can immediately disseminate it on a very big media network, Rents.com. I could also go on various different alt news talk shows, whether Red Ice Creations or I could pitch a show to one of their competitors. I would go with Red Ice first and pitch a show talking about that for 2 hours. You understand that? That is all part of the same package, but there's a different mindset at each segment. So there's a mindset when putting up a sticker or talking to a reporter. There's a mindset, of course, when you have to talk and you're given 10 minutes, which is an eternity. You know, Bob's talking about 3-second sound bites. That's usually what we're talking about. Our slogans are very, very, very simple, very direct, very eighth grade. Eighth grade memes are just that. But there's a whole different bill of goods when you're given 10 minutes and you're allowed to give examples. You're allowed to talk in analogies. You're allowed to come back to your point. They're giving you all the room in the world and want you to entertain the audience, basically. If you're listening to Truck Roy every morning who has to fill 5 hours a week, which is a lot. I only fill 3 hours a week in Endgame Exotica, and I can tell you doing like an hour show or a 2 hour show can be exhausting on live radio, much less any other venue. But that's what he's doing. He's doing a tremendous job. And then you have other avenues. So I'm trying to give you guys enough examples, but the interview was very critical, and this type of interview is very critical for Bugs going forward because you're going to see different mindsets and how they work. And how they develop solutions. And when it comes down to a short end meme, I don't write this stuff. When Bob puts it out, you notice I never change anything. I never change. If he says diversity means chasing down the last white person, we don't change anything. My job is just to disseminate it as broad and as fast as I can through his variety of different media platforms, so on and so forth. That's Truck Roy's job. That's Beefcake's job. That's over at Beefcake's Bootcamp at White Genocide Project. That's the writers at WhiteGenocideProject.com. That's FightWhiteGenocide.com. That's WhiteGenocide.info. There's a whole slew. That's our particular function down those whatever avenue you have to talk to. But I think it's important to understand these different functions, the different mindsets that go in. Bob is a genius at the soundbite, at the short meme, and that's period. End of discussion. Where you come into challenges, where the challenge comes into, is if you have to talk about that one particular sentence, like self-hatred is sick, within the confines of 2 hours. That's another show we're going to have on Truck Roy, and I'm going to talk about that in the next Follow the White Rabbit. And then I want to have Bob on again in the future because he's a very special guest. He's very good at what he does. He's an underrated writer. He's an underrated, in my opinion, he's an underrated genius at doing this type of thing. And he needs to be promoted more and more. My only challenge with the blog at WhitakerOnline.org going back 10 years wasn't that it wasn't phenomenal. It was always that most people don't know about it. And we want to make sure more and more know about it. And, of course, that is happening more and more. But this is H. Avenger. You've been listening to Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit with Bob Whitaker, and my commentary at the end, which is important because some people are going to see differences in the particular approaches. One is developing the meme, how to develop the meme. And by all means, I hope we have a Bob Jr. out there that can develop these memes. I don't do that. Another is disseminating it. Both are various different components of propaganda. Everyone here is Charles Krautheimer on Fox News. See these memes. Israel, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. But what you didn't see is who wrote it, who decided on what to go with. The Bob Whitaker of the neocon set. I'm not really familiar with that. I'm just familiar with the whole entire process. All their critical functions in disseminating a meme. And there's always room for more. In our particular function, we need as money as possible because we don't have Fox News. We do have growing venues like Red Ice Creations. Thank God for them. And Rents.com, which are the largest outside of the press TVs, outside of the Russia Today, that would be the next step up. They are the largest of their kind. And we'll talk a little bit more in the next Follow the White Rabbit with Chuck Roy about our particular models, about how we do things and why we do things. And filling time, which is a discussion on, well, you got to talk for 30 minutes. They're not going to cut anything. You could say whatever you want for 30 minutes. But at the same time, your job is to talk about something, a meme that Bob wrote, like self-hatred is sick. And your job, of course, is to seed that meme, to come back to that meme, to get the audience interested in talking about that meme or using it, enticing them into using it, like enticing them into using anti-racism as a code word for anti-whites. These are things I'm going to talk about with Chuck Roy because it's another critical function that some of you might be interested in or some of you might be naturals at. And we want as many as possible. All are critical functions. There's just a different mindset in how you go about it. What Bob, again, is the best at is developing the meme and understanding when you're talking to a reporter that's only going to give you a soundbite, only give them a soundbite. In other words, if you give them anything else, they're going to write anything else but that. If you were to put up a sticker with all kinds of things in it, and then diversity is a code word for white genocide, if that ever gets in the news, I can guarantee you they're going to show a picture of everything but that main meme. They're going to blur that out or something. And that's how that goes for our side. But at the same time, more and more we're going to have opportunities to talk for periods of time. And the ideal, if you're given a 10-minute segment on, you know, if Chuck Roy were given a 10-minute segment on something like Press TV, what we want is for him to get invited back. So you want to entertain them enough and talk about what we have to talk about to get our points across and entertain them enough to get invited back. The worst thing in the world is to have a big venue and to not get invited back because, no one wanted to hear what you had to say. Well, you got to make things interesting, and that's a whole other component. We'll talk about that in the next Follow the White Rabbit. We want to thank Bob again for coming on, and this is a great introduction to the differences in meme dissemination and what Bob is great at, and we look forward to watching Bob's vice presidential run because it's all about meme dissemination. It's a publicity stunt, basically, to seed white genocide deeper into public consciousness. But this is H. Avenger. You've been listening to Horace Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you again for listening, and thanks to everyone for getting Bob on. Black Rabbit Radio.